And here's a little story I don't know whether I've told you or not. I think I feel some ghoulies and ghosties and long-tailed beasties and things that go boop in the night, kind of wandering around here. But you know, little girls and boys have always loved to go to their grandmother's house for the summertime. And our little girl, little Rebecca, was no different than any other little girl. She loved to go spend the summer on the farm with her grandma and her granddaddy. And this must have been 100 years ago. And oh, the little girl loved the meadows and loved the hay and loved the flowers. But she had a special little hidey hole way up in the loft. And nobody knew where that little hidey hole was. And there she put her treasures and there she played. And there one hot summer afternoon, she fell asleep. And the men came along with a great big load of hay and tossed her little hidey hole full. And they could never find her. They never, never could find her. She just disappeared. Now, I forgot to tell you that she had a favorite little treasure, a little heart that she wore around her neck on a blue ribbon. And she loved it. And she had it on that day that she disappeared. 100 years passed. And another little girl came to spend the summer on the farm with her grandma and her granddaddy. And it was a bright, dry, moonlight night. She was asleep, but a sort of presence awoke her. And she looked out the window, and down there stood the quaintest little girl imaginable, holding out something on a blue ribbon and beckoning, beckoning, beckoning. And our little girl got out of bed and went down there. But when she got outside, there was no one there. Well, she went back upstairs and went to sleep. But she could hardly wait at breakfast to tell her grandparents of the strange occurrence of the night before. She said, a little girl was there. And they said, oh, no. She said, oh, yes, she was there. See, she left me a present. And she held up the little blue ribbon and the little gold heart. She left it there for me on the post. So I believe in ghosts, don't you?
Okay, whoever you are. And then there's mother and father and sisters and dogs and... We're leaving a few behind us for the moment because some of them are asleep. So Peter and I would first like to do a song that I would be tempted to call Russian if I wouldn't be corrected by one, the penny whistlers, and two, my husband. And I'm not sure who the more vehemently. It's a Cossack song, right? Okay. And it's in Russian, and I'll let him do that. And the translation is... a combination of our wits and, we hope, our expertise, and it's loose, right? Do you want to come up, Clyde? Ladies and gentlemen, a ham in the NICU. This is my young
ham. Jane turned, but she wanted to come again.
My Julia.
Thank you. Well, sir? One hot 4th of July day, old Uncle Remus come a-shufflin' out down the village street, down to the railroad station, and he look all around, and he see pile up there in front of him more watermelons than these folks are sitting in this audience tonight, and I'll tell you, that's a heap. And he say, look at all them watermelons. He say, I wonder where they come from. Well, they couldn't have come from but this one place in the whole United States, and that's the United Kingdom of Georgia. But he say, I don't want none of these here store-bought watermelons, no, sir. He say, this time of year, I wants to cut me a stick and start out early in the morning when the dew is still on the grass and a-sparkling like little diamonds. And when there ain't nobody watching me but that old yellowhammer sitting up there in that dead pine. And I just go down the road till I come to some long grass along the fence. And I climbs over the fence. And I takes my stick and I pokes around in that grass until I see something kind of twinkling at me. And I gets down there and I paws that grass. And I say, now look at that, what somebody done. Somebody done planted a whole big old patch of watermelons and gone off and left them. And I just pokes around there and I find me a great big strip of this ripety watermelon. And I thump him. And if he holler back like he fool, and anybody watching, man, they see a sight. They see me ball up my fist and bust that watermelon wide open. Then they see me make a scoop out of my hand and scoop up a great big chunk of rich red watermelon and fetch myself a swipe across the face. And they hear me popping my lips like a wagon driver popping his whip. And the more they see of that hand, the less they see of that watermelon. And when there ain't nothing left but the green rind, I just take leave of myself and turn around and forget about looking for that old cow. And I go on home and sits down on my piazza and nods in the sun. That is if the bumblebee don't get after me. Cause I've got more sweetness on the outside than I've got on the inside.
Piper had died, and as a rule, these pipes are generally handed down from one piper to the other.
Beg your pardon, sir. We'll give you credit anyway.
Put that down, man, I hope.
Thank you, and goodbye now. Don't hit me now until I get tuned up.
It might
take a couple of tunes to get these in orbit.
Yeah, we'll just do it as you say. you pump it bellows style, then with your right arm, and then with your left arm, you're controlling the...
Controlling the air in there. Puts it out through the reeds.
Mm-hmm. But that's what your right arm does with the bellows effect.
No, it just
keeps the air up.
There's a flap in here, you see. When I blow the bellows, there's a flap that comes back, you see, and doesn't let the air back into the bellows again.
This acts just like your gallbladder over on that side there.
Sorry, I don't know anything about
this
those.
This gives you power and this controls it.
Yes, this gives the power.
Yes.
In our whole life, you see, we were so startled because you didn't tootle into it.
Yes, that's right. So you're blowing more or less with your right elbow and
controlling
putting pressure with your left one.
And it must have been a thrill, Kevin, to find it. Did you know? Did the old man teach you, or did?
Oh, he did. He taught me the reed making and all that.
Oh my!
I make the reeds. I guess it's a sort of a. You can get it in Florida too. It's called Spanish cane. It grows on lakes. It's like bamboo.
Yes.
Hmm.
Where does it grow?
Well, it grows in California. I have some wood in the house. I'll show it here.
Do you have any
the white part, right?
No, that's ivory. That's ivory.
What's the cane then?
The cane is for making the reeds.
I bet we have some in Florida.
Oh yeah, I guess so. These are the reeds, you see, that I got to make them.
You usually use those for mouse.
Yeah, you use them for
mouse. It's the same type.
No, it's not. It's not the same type. This is what they call a dry reed. It's the only dry reed instrument in the world. The other reeds, they're what they call a wet reed.
Yes.
But this one is a dry one. Mm. That's the reason you can get the second octaves. The weather here, the dampness and the humidity affects them.
I see.
Kevin, I want to know about those little clamps over there. Now, what do you do for what sound on the set of three?
Back into tune again.
I wonder if leaving it in the room with the electric
organ
would help.
But you take it out again.
Yeah, and then it's gone again.
The change in temperature affects it. So therefore, you got to play it for a half hour or so to get the reeds in.
To dry it out.
in the right temperature, you know, that you're going to play in. And you got to hope for the best.
It was just wonderful last night. You were a great... it was a thrill.
Yeah.
Thrill.
Where does the sound come out?
It comes out of down here, and it comes out of here, and it comes out of here.
Yeah, let's try it again.
Thank you.
quite a different tone from the Scottish bagpipe.
Oh, it is indeed, yeah. It's a parlor instrument, originally, and in the olden days...
It seems like there's more you can do with it.
Yeah.
Oh, there is, yes, on the chromatic.
In the olden days.
In the olden days, more or less every, all of the gentry used to have their own piper. A lot of them used to go in for this instrument.
Yes.
For,
Do you know, doggone, that Irish writer who wrote Tale of the Piper? You know, he wrote the Destiny Bay was the book, and the Tale of the Piper was in it.
Tale of the Piper, yeah. He came from a place called Drogheda, and he settled in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and then went back. He went back to Ireland. This fellow I'm talking.
No.
Now, we're talking about different people.
Well, this Tale of the Piper, it was him that brought these up to concert pitch.
No, this was a different story. This is just fiction.
Oh, this fiction. Oh,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, but it
yes.
was, oh, doggone it, I wish I could remember. I'm losing my mind. But this is really quite a tale.
What, the piper?
Yeah, well, the piper, this fellow's sister was blind. See, she's a very nice woman. This all happened over in Ireland. And this piper came by, and they asked him what he could play, see. And he named a bunch of tunes that were very, very bad tunes, see. And they wouldn't let him play them, see. And then finally they asked him to play a religious tune, and he refused to play it, see. And they drove him off, and this... He was afraid to look at his tracks. He's afraid he'd find a cloven hoof.
We'd
love
a cloven.
Yeah. Now, if you can get hold of it, don't go on.
Well, you remember it, and then so we can learn it. You've got a little pipe.
Yeah, this is what they call a penny whistle.
Is that a penny whistle?
That's a penny whistle.
Well, I've heard the penny whistlers sing, and I kept wondering where they got their name.
Can you play that song that we were talking about, and you just hummed some of it, about the spinning wheel song?
Oh, yes. Yes.
You know, that, I think that's one of the best that I've ever heard.
It's a long time since I've played it now. I've got to brush up on it.
It's a great tune.
We used to carry these in our school bags for the school.
Oh, did you?
No. Learning who knew the most tunes.
Oh.
Thank you.
Bless you, Kevin. Oh. You made the sun come out.
Yeah,
the sun
come out.
You passed out the sun.
Yeah.
Where can I buy one of those?
Ireland, probably, huh?
Well,
Ireland.
We're running you ragged, but you've got to tell us a little tale.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I tell it in my own ways, mostly, more or less, from my mother.
Yeah.
And the part of the country that I come from, I'm mostly reared up in the hills like this, and of course, we had no radio or television or nothing at all of this modern day
thank
stuff.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. And some of the tales my mother used to tell us was more or less weather tales, and of course a lot of things mixed in amongst the two, but this one in particular, she'd always talk about the weather, and she'd start off, and well, there was once upon a time, and it was long ago, and long ago it was, and they lived in this house in the side of a hill, a mammy and daddy. And they lived there for a long, long time. And this mammy and daddy, they had four children. They had two little laddies and two little girlies. And they lived happily there, the four of them and the daddy and mammy. And these four children, little laddies and girlies, used to go to school. And this day they were going to school. And lo and behold you, what do you think happened? But out of nowhere, if it didn't start getting dark, and it started getting darker, and darker, and darker, and it got that dark that you couldn't see your finger. And the oldest said, get a hold of my hand now, and we'll have to hide someplace until this big strange storm is over. So the both of them got a hold of their hands and they started to run. And they ran as fast as their two legs could carry them until they came to this house. And they knocked on the door and there was no one inside. So the four of them crept in and they laid down. And the rain, it came down, and you could hear it, and there was thunder and lightning. And they were getting scared. And in the corner, they seen something. And they looked again. And the next thing, what do you think happened? But if this big flag that was on the floor didn't lift up, and out hops these two small little men, and they were only about that size, and they were wearing these green jackets on them, and they had shoes all curled up. So one of the little men said to them, what are you doing in here? So they up and they told him the whole story, how it got so dark outside, and that they had to come in out of the rain. Well, he said, you better follow me, because this is my place. Well, they done what they were told, and he opened the flag one side, and they crept down into this hole. And they walked in this narrow hole, and they couldn't, it was as dark as a bag. And the next thing, they seen this light in the distance, and they were awful scared. So finally, they landed into this big room. And says the young, says one of the little men, well, no, wait here. I'll have to see my boss. And the oldest lad said, who is he? Oh, he said, he's king of the leprechauns. So they all got scared. Well, back home, the daddy and mammy were getting worried, and the daddy went out and he started looking for them, and they looked high and dry, and sight nor light could be found. So back in the room, they were round about and they were getting very hungry, And the next thing, who walked into the room was the king of the leprechauns. And he asked them their names. And they told them. So, he said, what were you doing in my place? So they told him the whole story, how it got dark, and they had to come in for shelter. And he asked them what their daddy did. So he told them, they told him that their daddy was a farmer, and that the poor farmer that hadn't much money or nothing. Well, he said, can you sing or dance or do nothing? Well, the oldest one jumped up. He said, I play the penny whistle. He said, I want to hear you play it. So with that, he took the penny whistle out of his bag and he played him a tune called the Rakes of Mala. So the fairy was that overjoyed that he gave them a big feed, and he said, go into that room there now and fill your pockets down with gold. So they did, and that one of the leprechauns took them outside, and when they got outside, it was as bright as day, and they started running, and they were laded down, and they started going faster, but they were getting awful tired with all the gold they had. So the daddy and mammy was out, and they were looking, and the next thing, they heard this shouting in the distance, and the shouting came closer and closer. And who was it but the mammy and daddy out looking for them? So the daddy spotted them and he started running until they all got together, and they hugged them and they kissed them, and they took them home and they told them the whole story about the leprechauns and how they got down and how he gave them the gold and how they played the music for them. So that night they had a big dance, and after the dance was over, played music, fiddles and flutes, and after the dance was over, they put down the kettle and they made the tea, and if they didn't live happy, that we may.
Ah, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
You ought to tell that on the program.
Oh, so beautiful.
Say, now, what was the tune he played on the penny whistle?
The Rakes of Mala.
Rakes of Mala.
He played?
Oh, yes,
he
yes.
He played the Rakes of Mala.
Rakes of Mala.
Rakes of Mallow.
Hey, can I hear that? Nice
wash woman. We need a place to dance.
Oh, boy.
Look, I write short stories. I've never been able to publish them. I had a book published. I'd like to read a short story to you that I wrote.
Yes.
Very short, if you don't mind.
Yes. I'd love to.
All of that stuff, you see, with memory, if you know what I mean, the word we use, you know, you go from one thing to the other.
Oh!
And it's a very.
Yes! Wonderful!
Oh, I'd like to know. How long you've been here, and how did you come here? Now, you grew up in Ireland, right?
I grew up in Ireland,
and
yeah.
How old were you when you came here?
I left Ireland when I was about 20.
Mm-hmm.
And
special reason?
Financial reasons, and of course, there was a big family of us in it, and we went away to earn money and send it home to rare younger ones than me. And
how many children?
There was 11 of us all together, ma'am.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
And there was none of us ever together at the same time. We were all gone before the youngest son was gone.
And which child were you? Number what?
I was number 8.
Number 8?
Number 8.
I want right now to see if... I want you to start thinking about the possibility of coming to Florida to our Florida Folk Festival.
I'd like to.
I think that our Florida Folk Festival Association could, we put you up. You'd have no expense when you got there, and I expect we could get up some travel money.
Yeah.
Because I think we have a Catholic school in Lake City
with Irish sisters who teach the little children the jigs and reels. And my, they'd be thrilled to see you. Everybody would be thrilled to see you. And I'm sure that the University of Florida would love to have you come over and, I'm sure we could set up some engagements around. But the main thing would be our festival. And I think you love it.
On the banks of the Suwannee River.
And it's in May 2nd. 3rd and 4th.
That's Friday,
Saturday.
I'll give you my address and send you all the literature on it.
Yes, I will. And we'd just be so happy, so honored, because we've never had anything like you at the festival, have we?
No.
And in return, you'd be thrilled because it's a cross section of the lower of the area, the general area, the deep south. We have a water witcher.
Oh, yes.
We have a whip cracker.
Clog dancers.
Yeah.
The last tune that you just played now.
Yeah, the clog dancer.
I played for
the clog dancers in Lancashire.
And we have the country dancers.
Have you?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, now they have clog teams that come down and dance at the festival. There's always one or two or three of them that come in. The North Carolina cloggers are about the best, though.
Yeah.
Those
Carolina,
I thought.
But we'll let me give you right now, because we might. Of course, we're gonna see you, because we're gonna be right here, and we're gonna transport you back and forth, and. But I want to get your name and address.
Do you tell stories at all?
No, I just listen.
Oh, yes.
but this lady now is from North Carolina, and a lot of her heritage and lore is from her father.
Oh, yes. Well, all mine is...
about your father, Mary?
Well, he's just a typical mountain man.
Well, like
in his 80s. He's of Welsh descent, and he can sort of.
The name is Waltney.
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 I've been in South Wales and worked down around there, mines and Abergavenny.
Were you thrilled with Jean Ritchie last night?
I was.
Yes. She's the real.
The real McCoy. Yes.
Well, this one is too.
She is. Yes. Yeah.
She's not on the program, but. That's all right. She appreciates every little.
There's another girl there from, I think she's from Canada. She sings with a real traditional.
She was good. Yeah.
Give me a phone number, too, if you can.
I will,
He has four children.
Oh. Well, we'll bring down the family. You could bring down your family, because we can put you up.
How old are your children?
Damn right, here, man. I mean, he can do three or four things with a bagpipe, but writing and talking and...
I break my wrist every time I write.
It's hot, isn't it?
It is. I'm going to have to get my clothes out and run change.
I have a lovely niece who lives at Long Grove, just a little north. It's a little community out of Chicago, and you all meet. She's a darling. She has two little boys that live in the country.
Oh, yes.
And your children would enjoy them. Her husband has a little manufacturing business.
Oh, yeah.
In Chicago.
I can't find the book.
Oh, you know what?
What?
Honest confession, your wife slipped it to me.
She did, huh?
Yes. And you will get the book and you'll read the story.
Sarah, not that chair, honey.
I don't like this one very well, but that's a leprechaun. Stung, a bee just stung.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dear. Thank you.
Aw, you don't
weird. Did you meet any of them?
I haven't. She just answered.
That expression is marvelous.
I got a book of poetry and a book of prose.
Mark Lawler.
Yeah, that's me.
Oh.
Beautiful.
What kind of wood is that made of?
That's holly.
Hollywood?
Oh. Well, I never found out how to finish it off very well, and I took the advice, that is, I accepted the advice of a fellow out there. He told me what to get. I've got another one that's better than that.
Oh, no, couldn't be better.
Do you do it with a knife, just a knife, or what?
One of these X-Acto knives. Do you know what an X-Acto knife is?
Yes. Like a razor blade, sure.
Yeah, and you can change blades in it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
John, I'm relieved to find this. Well, I don't know. This. I'll read a short one. The name is this is The Scale of Requital. Westmeath McDublin had spent 40 years following the precepts of his mother, Katie McDublin, whose living had come from taking in washing, and whose reason for living had been to raise her 9 children to respect all womankind and to love their neighbors. Life offered its earthy attractions, and his religious advisor was often saddened by Meath's Saturday night relaxations. But the McDublin code was as scrupulous on the detours as on the highway of virtue. As a result, no breeze in Lobster Sound, perfumed by the pines or compounded with clam flats, blew on a more respected citizen of the state of Maine at the time of the flowering of his chivalry. But the summer people who visited his little fish market on the town wharf were difficult to love. A haze of education, culture, and gossip clouded any meeting of the minds between the native and his more sophisticated customers. They regarded him as an interesting specimen. To him, their mild insanity was amusing or irritating. A Mrs. Supra, in particular, tested his resolutions. No enthusiasm swelled under his oilskin coat one morning when the great mass of a foreign-built limousine rolled up to his market window and stopped. The thoughts under his customary black derby were not mercenary. No smile of greeting lighted the base of the luxuriant mustache worn as compensation for a deficiency in height and girth. He weighed the exaggerated courtesy with which his prospective customer parted from a male companion at the car door and placed accurately the man's social position and degree of intimacy with his hostess. He scanned the woman's muscular intellectual face for a point to admire and blamed his own discernment for finding none. The intelligence was unmellowed by understanding, and he guessed that the forcefulness was rooted in self-interest. His distaste for fashionable clothes was pardonable in a native and not limited to those of Mrs. Supra. "Good morning, Westmeath," she said, hitting a false note in fellowship as she strode onto the wet floor of the market. "Have you saved me something especially good this morning? I have a guest, Mr. Jeunesse, the poet. You know of him, I'm sure, and your markets are so limited." Her voice rolled in richness. "I got haddock and I got cod, but I ain't got nothing special," specified Meat, choosing to admire the tank of well-scaled fish rather than meet her eyes and invite mean thoughts. Mrs. Supra said, "Oh," in a maddening tone of refined disbelief. Sweeping masterfully about the shop, peeking under lids and back of counters, she added, "I hope for a pompano, or perhaps a sea trout. You understand, I'm sure." Me thought about the time she had gone into a Maine housewife's kitchen and taken the lid off of the boiling kettle to see what primitive folk ate, but he said only, "No, ma'am, I ain't got 'em." He could have said, "I ain't never had them and ain't never gonna have them." Mrs. Supra continued, "Cod, haddock, poor Mr. John S. I must take him to Bar Harbor and give him a good dinner tomorrow. Let me see. I believe haddock is less coarse. I will take 3 slices. No, Agnes won't want any. 2 slices across the largest section of this one. A thin, imperious finger suited for pointing indicated her choice. Meath balanced peace against profit and decided to eat the unsalable residue himself. He knew